Hello, everyone, and welcome into another edition of the Valley Experience podcast, an Arizona sports podcast that goes into everything Arizona sports and sports related. I'm Ryan Pasesnik, alongside, as always, Logan Lober. Logan, lots of news that happened this week with the opening of free agency. The all-star starters for MLB were also announced as well, and we should also be getting further notifications on who made the reserve team. Lots of news to get into today, and I'm super happy to be with you here.
Yeah, me too. Like you said, lots of exciting stuff just went down just as soon as an hour ago with some more Suns news that we're definitely going to get into. But yeah, Suns, big stuff going on right now at free agency. D-backs, lots of stuff going on, inching closer to the end of the first half, and we're going to get into all that here today.
Absolutely. And with that, let's go ahead and kick it off with the Phoenix Suns. Of course, the main concern was going to be coming into this offseason is what were they going to do with their depth at the bench? Well, in order to go and address those needs, the Suns went out and re-signed Josh Okogie and Damian Lee to both of their respective deals. They also re-signed Drew Eubanks off of the Portland Trail Blazers, Kidabeats Diop off of the San Antonio Spurs, Yuta Watanabe off of the Brooklyn Nets, and probably the most notable one that came down just moments ago is Eric Gordon, who, of course, we know as being one of the premier sharpshooters within this league, has been an excellent role player coming off of the bench. Just, I'll tell you what, if ever there was a doubt that we had about the Suns and their ability to at least make some sort of a splash in free agency, they went out and really, I think, solidified themselves as being that premier free agent destination by just all of the signings that they've made up to this point, and especially for the deals that they got a lot of these players on as well. I mean, especially when you consider a guy like Eric Gordon, who at this stage of his career, he's 34 years old. I mean, he's obviously much more of a bench player now than he was maybe early on in his career, but still, I think that just everything that has happened for the Suns up to this point has really made them just a place where a lot of these veteran guys who maybe want to go and chase a ring at this point want to come and play because they think that this is their best chance to come and actually win a ring.
Yeah, I 100% agree. And I mean, honestly, I am very excited about what the Suns did just in the span of 48 hours. I mean, you talk about coming into the offseason, our only trade assets were Chris Paul and DeAndre Ayton. And DeAndre Ayton is still on the Suns right now, so we haven't even used his trade value, if we even will use his value. But we had a 38-year-old Chris Paul as basically our only trade asset that we used. And absolutely zero cap space, like the least amount in the entire league. We have so much money locked into our big three and Booker, Beal, and Durant, and we have $30 million invested into DeAndre Ayton. So you're telling me a team with hardly any trade assets and hardly any cap space was able to put together these type of moves? I mean, it was just such great news to see just how aggressive they were right when free agency started at 3 o'clock here. And then now today with the announcement of signing Eric Gordon. So just, I'm a fan of all the moves that they made. Just great work by James Jones to, you know, convince these guys to come here. And yeah, I mean, just the fact that they were able to put together this type of offseason with acquiring a star and Bradley Beal. I mean, they, like I just said, they have hardly any trade assets and they're able to acquire a star. I mean, how many teams are able to do that? Hardly any. So they acquired a superstar in Bradley Beal and they put together what's looking at like it's going to be a great bench with the few signings that they made when free agency started. So just great work by James Jones, great work by the Suns, and I'm just really excited about the off season.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, you mentioned the Bradley Beal acquisition, and something that I want to circle back to is in his opening press conference, he said that this is Book Nation. So he understands because Devin Booker has been with this franchise since 2015. He's went through the good, the bad, and sometimes the very ugly when it comes to the Phoenix Suns over the span of now what's going to be going into his ninth season in the NBA. Hard to believe that. But it's crazy because you see, like, he has stayed patient through all of this and has said, I want the super team to come to me. And what this really basically reminds me a lot of is when the Heat made their big three with LeBron, Chris Bosh, and Dwayne Wade. They knew immediately when they were signing with the Heat that, hey, this is still Dwayne Wade's team because Dwayne Wade at that point was already a solidified superstar who had won a championship with the Heat in 2006. And now you had two more starting superstar caliber players in both Chris Bosh and LeBron James. And now you have your big three there. And what they were able to do was go ahead and fill out the rest of their roster with veteran minimum guys that were just looking to get minutes, but also prove themselves on the court to maybe go and up their value for the next free agency. And that's basically exactly what you're seeing here with the Suns is now you have that third superstar in Bradley Beal. You already had two guys on the roster with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant, and now you're starting to see that all of these players are starting to buy in because they think that the Suns have a legitimate opportunity to go and win a championship. And it fills my heart with so much joy because if you just look at where we were like 5, 6 years ago, we were basically league doormats. And now to see us finally get into this position where we are legitimate title contenders and people and players actually want to come to Phoenix. It's incredible to see how the tides have turned.
Yeah, it really is. You brought up the Booker saying he wants to build a super team here in Phoenix. He wants a super team to come here. And it's just crazy how, I mean, that came up. People were talking about that quote last year with Kevin Durant coming, and then now it just gets brought up again with Bradley Beal. So it's just like the players just keep coming to Phoenix, and I'm super excited. I'm so glad that they were able to make the moves that they did, and it's just gonna be we're in for it's a really good season this season, I hope.
We most certainly are. And I mean, right now, I mean, it's crazy to think that Kendrick Perkins was actually very high on the Suns from the very beginning. He already said that the Suns are the odds-on favorite to go and win the 2024 NBA Finals, which coming from Big Perk, that's certainly a compliment. And that was also at a time too when the Suns hadn't even filled out the rest of their roster. So that was great to see. I do want to mention that Jock Landale actually got a bag in Houston for a 4 years, $32 million. He's a guy that I would have liked to have seen the Suns bring back just because he's one of those guys where he is just one tough son of a gun. He is tough as nails, backs guys down, gives his full-on effort on the court all the time. And I'm happy for him that he was able to get that type of contract in Houston because he deserved it. And I wish him nothing but the best and hope that he succeeds at a high level.
Yeah, me too. I think it was a bit of a surprise. It was like right before free agency kicked off that the Suns decided to pull his qualifying offer, which made him an unrestricted free agent. So, and then right when free agency did start, Eubanks was the Suns' first signing that was announced. So I think that pretty much ruled out any return of Jock. But I mean, we talked about it. I believe it was our very first episode when I said, one guy that I thought that really solidified a role in that last series against Denver and going into the future was Jock. I thought, he showed a lot of effort when some other guys weren't, quite frankly. But I mean, I'm happy for Jock. He got a nice contract with the Rockets, so hopefully he can just keep that momentum going and wish him nothing but the best.
I completely agree. And I mean, he's just one of the many players that I think, have been let go by the Suns. But I want to just circle back to something because I think it's fascinating to look at just the complete change in the roster with the Suns. I mean, considering that they made the finals 2 years ago, the only three guys that are left from that Suns finals team on the Suns, Devin Booker, DeAndre Ayton, Cameron Payne. That's it. Those are the three guys that are left from that magical run that they had just a couple years ago. And it's crazy to see how much the roster has changed in that sense. Moving on to our second topic, I do want to bring up just something about the signings. I mean, obviously, we mentioned Yuta Watanabe, we mentioned Keita Bates-Diop, Drew Eubanks, and now Eric Gordon. Out of the guys that the Suns have signed up to this point, which one intrigues you the most?
I would honestly, before Eric Gordon, my favorite signing was Keita Bates-Diop. I think he was one of the more underrated signings of the entire offseason, really, so far. He had a really solid year last year with San Antonio, kind of came into his own finally. He's been in the league for a couple of years, but he's very long, and that's kind of a theme that we saw with some of the Suns' moves, is that they added a lot of length, a lot of athleticism. And outside of Eric Gordon, these guys are still young. I mean, these guys are
Oh,
still
yeah.
in their mid to late 20s, so they're kind of going away from some of the moves that they've made in the past, and really adding some nice youth. So I really like Diop. I think he could honestly have a chance to, be that fifth starter in the lineup. And I believe he shot either 40 or just under 40% from three, which is awesome. I mean, that's exactly what the Suns need. And add that to, his defensive versatility. I'm really excited about, what he can do. And yeah, like I said, I think this is one of the more underrated signings of the offseason. I even saw a clip on Twitter of some highlights of his, and he had like this spot up three pointer. And I'm not saying he's gonna be this guy, but his form looked a lot like Mikal Bridges, honestly. I thought yeah, just that spot up three point, nice form. So I mean, I don't think he's gonna end up being as good as Mikal, but if they can, I think we really kind of felt the loss of a guy like Mikal last year. So if they can add a guy who, is going to be able to guard one of the best players and, knock down a corner three or just knock down his shots, I think that's going to be a really good outcome for this team.
Yeah, I agree. I think Keita Bates-Diop was certainly a player that was intriguing, especially when you consider that he started most of the games for San Antonio this past year. And now, granted, the Spurs were one of the worst teams in the NBA, but he still, considering that the Suns got a starter of Keita Bates-Diop caliber on a veteran minimum deal, that was just an absolute steal for him. And like you mentioned, he's still super young. He can play the three, the four, or the even like a small ball five if you need him to as well. This is a great signing for the Suns, and I think it's going to certainly be interesting to see how he performs within the team. For me, though, I also want to touch upon another player, and that's Eric Gordon, which of course that deal just went down today. Now, it's crazy enough because when he was a free agent, I believe this was in 2012, the Suns had signed him to a max offer sheet, I believe was around 4 years, $58 million. But the thing with it is that he was a restricted free agent at the time. And so it was the then Charlotte Hornets, or excuse me, New Orleans Hornets, who were able to go and bring him back on that same deal. So even though it's 11 years late, it's great to see Eric Gordon finally end up in the purple and orange. And he's going to be a guy that I think what is going to really be a nice acquisition for this, for the bench in particular, because he's a guy that not only can play the two or the three, but you can also use him at the point as well. And he can also play, I mean, outside of being an excellent defender, he can also play really good defense as well. He's been known to do that. Against Donovan Mitchell, I saw in the playoffs. And I mean, when you consider that he does that against D. Mitchell, who is one of the best scorers in the league, I mean, that just goes to show even just like the type of scrappy player that he is. And I think also the type of player that really Frank Vogel and James Jones are looking to blend in with this team. And that's great to see that now finally we get Eric Gordon in a Suns uniform.
Yeah, I know. It's honestly just like it's just like a joke between Suns fans now. We're like, I feel like the last 5 years, Eric Gordon, like we felt like we were about to get Eric Gordon, whether it's like a trade or sign, and it just has never happened ever since 2012, like you said. It was almost 11 years to the date where Eric Gordon is finally a member of the Suns. So yeah, like you said, maybe 11 years too late, but hey, at least it finally happened. So I'm excited to finally see Eric Gordon, purple and orange. And yeah, just, I mean, that really came out of nowhere, honestly. The Suns made like four deals right when free agency opened. And, they only had like a roster spot or two left. So, I thought, maybe they just kind of go after, a nice depth piece to have towards the end of the bench. But no, I mean, Eric Gordon turned down more better offers from contending teams to be here in Phoenix. So, I mean, just the fact that they were able to get all these quality pieces on veteran minimums. I mean, if this is what having no cap space looks like, then I'm fine with it, dude, because all these signings, I'm intrigued by every single one of them. So, I mean, props to James Jones, props to Matt Ishbia. People were saying, bad move for the Suns to trade for Bradley Beal. How are they gonna fill out the rest of the roster? Well, I mean, they did it and they exceeded my expectations.
Yeah, they certainly exceeded mine as well. And in that regard, I'm feeling pretty darn good about how this team is going to shape up going into this upcoming season. Staying with the Suns here, I'd like to bring up about another guy who we've talked about extensively on this podcast, and that is the never-ending story about what is going to happen with one DeAndre Ayton. Now, obviously, there are reports that the Suns are not looking to trade DeAndre Ayton at the moment. That's specifically from Arizona Sports' John Gambadoro, who has been adamant that the Suns aren't going to trade DeAndre Ayton. But it still is a constant conversation that I feel like we have to talk about because with these signings, obviously, they're going to impact not only the entire Suns roster in some way, shape, or form, but also the starters you got to think about as well. And when you consider that DeAndre Ayton is a max player on this team, and when you also consider the limited role that he's probably going to have offensively, because all of those touches are mostly going to be going to Bradley Beal, Kevin Durant, and Devin Booker, you really do have to, have this conversation about what is going to happen with DeAndre Ayton. And I think, it's probably going to be written in stone that he most likely is going to be a defensive type of guy. So, but the question really becomes because we know that there's a lot of upside when it comes to DeAndre Ayton's game. And we really got to just ask, is DA going to be that type of guy to really accept a lesser role, especially as a defensive center, rim protector? Then he is really an offensive guy. What do you think, Logan?
Yeah, I mean, this has been something that we've talked about. Well, it feels like honestly every episode. If we think DA is gonna get moved, so honestly, to this point, I feel like he's probably gonna be on the team when it comes to opening night. But I mean, if the Suns really wanna just balance this team out as much as they can, I feel like a move could still be in the cards. And honestly, I think that some of the moves that we saw the last couple of days in free agency have kind of helped DA's value. We've got, I mean, Dylan Brooks is getting 20 million a year. Sabonis just signed like a $40 million max deal. So I mean, these guys, there are a lot of guys that are getting a lot of money in free agency right now. And, you know, now DA's contract doesn't look as bad as it is. I don't think it's a bad contract, but I mean, everyone's getting paid right now. So, I mean, teams can find a way to take on 30 million if they want. And, you know, 30 million for 24-year-old center with all the potential in the world, I don't think that's bad value at all. So, you know, if the Suns wanna, you know, maybe try to trade DA for either like, you know, a couple bench pieces along with like a veteran center to have, or maybe they can look to add like a true point guard, which is something they still don't really have on this roster outside of campaign. But yeah, I think the Suns have a lot of options when it comes to DA. And, you know, I wouldn't mind to see them test the market again, see what other teams are willing to offer. And I wouldn't mind just, you know, keeping them on the team. I think, you know, we've built a really good team. It makes it easier to, you know, want to keep DA now that we're confident in some of the bench moves that we've made. So, yeah, I mean, I'm sure this is going to be kind of an ongoing topic this offseason when it comes to DA. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, look, I think at this point, the Suns are not going to trade him. I think that they're most likely going to stick with him. I mean, the only way that I see him getting traded is if they're within probably the next week or so, or even the next couple months or so, there comes a deal where the Suns just get an offer that they can't turn down and they decide to go and pull the trigger on it. And look, I mean, we all understand. I mean, we've said this over and over again about just how gifted of an athlete DeAndre Ayton is, but how also inconsistent he is from time to time. And look, I really hope that he finds a place on this team because, I mean, I don't know. I might be in the minority here when I say this, but I want to see DeAndre Ayton succeed. And look, I'm sure like many other Suns fans also feel that same exact way as well. And it's just important though that he has to also accept his new role within this team and not try and also get out of that, you know.
Yeah, I think if the Suns get off to a slow start to open the year, I know how Suns fans are, and I feel like DA is just gonna be the guy that everyone points the finger at if the Suns get off to a slow start, even if it's not really his fault. It's just the way it is. People like to, you know, pick their scapegoat, and it feels like DA's been that guy the last few years, which, you know, sometimes it's justified, sometimes I don't think it is. But, you know, personally, I'm all for having DA on this team. But I understand, you know, that we want to build the best roster possible. And now DA is pretty much our only trade asset right now. So if the right offer's there, I don't have any problems with moving on from him. But yeah, like I said, if the Suns don't get off to a hot start, or just DA in general doesn't get off to a hot start, I think, you know, come trade deadline, if we need to make a move, DA will definitely be, you know, the guy that we're making calls about.
So now that we analyzed all of the Suns' offseason moves up to this point, let's talk about teams that look as potential threats to the Suns in the Western Conference, more specifically the Los Angeles Lakers, who signed Gabe Vincent to a 3-year, $30 million contract. They also re-signed D'Angelo Russell and Rui Hachimura, who were really key role players in the Lakers, who they acquired at the deadline and really were instrumental in them making their late playoff run and even making it all the way to the Western Conference Finals. That's a team right there that I look at and I kind of have a little bit of scare towards because they got better again, as mentioned, at the deadline by acquiring D'Angelo Russell, Jared Vanderbilt, and Malik Beasley in a package deal. Rui Hachimura was also a good player for them, as mentioned. So I'm looking at the Lakers, and even then, too, I mean, you still have LeBron, who is 38 years old at this point and is not the same player, but he's still effective on the court when he has his number called upon, just because that's the type of great player that he is. We also see, too, that when Anthony Davis is healthy, that he can be the type of dominant force that we all know that he is accustomed to being. So I'm looking at the Lakers here, and they kind of scare me a little bit, but it's also at a point too where I look at them and I know that for a fact the Suns certainly have the capabilities and the roster now to compete with those upper tier teams like the Lakers, like the Nuggets even too. Moving on to baseball, they of course announced the MLB starters for the All-Star game on Friday, and one Corbin Carroll for the Arizona Diamondbacks was announced as a starter. Good for Corbin Carroll. I mean, we can't talk about this guy enough, about how awesome of a player that he is. You talk about him just running the bases with elite level speed, the fact that he is a power hitter, he's an excellent base hitter, he is an excellent defensive player. This guy is the complete package for the Diamondbacks. We all know that. We've been talking about that the past couple episodes. I feel like we can't talk about him enough just because of how awesome of a player that he is. I'd like to talk about one guy who I feel like we haven't talked about enough on the show, and that is Ketel Marte. Because ever since the Diamondbacks traded away Paul Goldschmidt, Ketel Marte was being propped up as that now face of the franchise player of the Diamondbacks. And he had that incredible season in 2019 where he slugged 35 plus homers. And we're looking at this guy, and it's like he's a superstar. But then you start to see, like, he had a down year last year. Now, granted, he was dealing with some injuries and he was unable to make the cut for the All-Star game in 2021. But this year in particular, Ketel Marte has really risen up to that same level of play that he was at, from which we were accustomed to seeing, I think, beforehand. And I know, like, the All-Star reserves are actually going to be announced really shortly here, but I would be really surprised, and honestly, I think it would be a travesty if Ketel Marte is left off of that list, because the guy has deserved it from just his incredible offensive playmaking and defensive playmaking abilities this season.
Yeah, I agree. If it wasn't for Corbin Carroll being so amazing, I think Ketel Marte would be getting talked about a lot more. But even though Corbin Carroll is having such a great year, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be talking about Ketel Marte, because we absolutely should be. After his breakout year, I believe that was 2019 when he started the All-Star game. He had a couple down years, but a lot of those were kind of injury plagued years, and now that he's fully healthy, he looks like he's all the way back to his all-star self, if not even better. He One thing about Ketel is that, as a switch hitter, he's kind of struggled from the left-hand side, but he's always been a great hitter on the right-hand side. But this year he's hitting well from both sides of the plate. He's hitting home runs, he's hitting for average, and he's getting on base a lot, which is something that, he's struggled with the last couple of years as well in taking his walks. So yeah, I fully expect Ketel to be on the All-Star team as a reserve. I hope he is. And yeah, I mean, the D-backs have had, great first half of the year, and obviously super happy that Corbin Carroll got the recognition he deserved as an All-Star starter. And I hope he is followed by Marte and other guys too, like Zach Gallen, and hopefully Perdomo makes it too, because Perdomo has had such an unbelievable bounce back year. He was statistically one of the worst hitters in baseball last year, and now he has been one of the best hitters in all of baseball this year. So he's been amazing this year. He's, taken a huge step forward, and yeah, just looking forward to getting to the All-Star break. Hopefully everyone stays healthy, and just excited to get ready for this playoff push.
Yeah, absolutely. And one guy that I'd like to mention who is probably not going to make it at this point, But also Christian Walker as well. Christian Walker, I feel, has been just a severely underappreciated player ever since he's been on the Diamondbacks. And look, he's been relied upon to fill big shoes in Paul Goldschmidt at first base. But when you consider not only the type of power hitter that he is, but also the fact that this year he's been driving in runs, he's been getting base hits, he's been making incredible glove saves and line drives that have just gone into his glove and it sticks like glue. He's been fantastic this year at first base and has really deserved to get a lot more recognition than what he's gotten. I mean, I highly doubt that he's going to make it at this point, especially granted that I think it's pretty much written in stone who the reserves are going to be. But he really should have gotten more recognition because he's been a guy that has just had an incredible season up to this point and really has deserved more recognition than what he's been getting.
It is incredibly hard to fill the shoes of a guy like Paul Goldschmidt and what he did. And, looking at it now in his short time with the Diamondbacks, which is just crazy to say because he was a guy I thought that would be a D-back for life. But, yeah, it's incredibly hard to fill the shoes of a guy like him. But I mean, he really has done a great job in doing that. He is. I think he's a really similar player to Paul Goldschmidt. He plays excellent defense at first base, which is something that we were used to seeing with Goldie. Walker actually won the Gold Glove Award last year, and he's just been, statistically the best defensive first baseman in the league this year and last year as well. And, we see what he can do with the bat. He was, when he first started, he was just known as just a raw power bat. That was pretty much all you're going to get for him. But he has been a guy that's gonna, similar to Goldie as well, he's gonna play every single day and he's gonna play excellent defense at first. And he's gonna be a consistent bat to have in the middle of your lineup, not only hitting for home runs, which he's done this year, but hitting for average as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And that I think was a cause for concern last year was because Christian Walker did have a low batting average. I think it was right around 210 for the season, but now I think it's right around 260, which that's still pretty darn solid. And so he's now, it just goes to show that he's getting on base a lot more often. He's driving in those more runs and he's been that more consistent hitter. And I think obviously the cause for concern is when you trade away a guy that, like Paul Goldschmidt, who has been touted as America's first baseman at one point in time. It's, the next guy that is going to be going in there to fill his shoes is going to really have a lot on his shoulders in order to do that. And for Christian Walker to be able to hold down first base for as long as he has, kudos to him. He's done an excellent job. I do want to touch upon a subject here when it comes to the Diamondbacks, and that's their pitching. Obviously, Merrill Kelly is now on the 15-day injured list, and that means we're probably not going to see him until after the All-Star break, which is a huge blow to the Diamondbacks starting pitching staff. But I do want to touch upon two guys that have really impressed in their last couple of starts, and that is both Ryan Nelson and Tommy Henry, which those are two guys that they're more towards like the bottom of your order when it comes to obviously like your primary starter, like your best starter and your worst starter. Ryan Nelson, I think, has kind of been that guy that's been on that bottom tier of the starting list, but he has been just lights out his last couple of starts. His last two starts, he has went 14 and a third innings pitched. He's given up six hits, two earned runs, three base on balls, and 12 strikeouts. And in yesterday's game against the Angels, he struck out both Ohtani and Trout twice, which is really hard to do. I mean, considering that 1-2 punch there is probably one of the best, or if not the best, in all of baseball. But it's not even Ryan Nelson, it's also Tommy Henry as well. I mean, Tommy Henry had a really solid start against the Angels a couple days ago. He went 5 2/3 innings pitch, gave up four hits and one home run. That was, of course, to Shohei Ohtani, which, hey, Shohei is easily the best player in baseball. So you can kind of get away with giving up a home run or two to Shohei if you want to, just not consistently. But I'll tell you what, I've been really impressed with what I've seen from, your third and fourth guys on this team, and Tommy Henry and Ryan Nelson. And it's been really pleasant to see, because the Diamondbacks are going to really need them to step up, especially in the absence of Merrill Kelly. And they've done just that.
Yeah, a lot of outside of Gallen and Kelly, it feels like these guys, get like as close as they can to being sent down, and then they have a couple of good starts. Ryan Nelson was on the hot seat, a couple starts ago. Just everyone was thinking, okay, there's no way the D-backs let him make his next start. He's got to go down to Reno. We got to get someone else in the rotation. But he made his next start and he pitched extremely well. And the start after that, which was last night against the Angels, he pitched extremely well again. So, it's you want to see as much consistency as possible, but it's really encouraging to have, these guys just battle back. No matter how much they're struggling, they're gonna come out there and, give it their all every fifth day. So it's encouraging to see the young guys like Ryan Nelson and Tommy Henry have encouraging starts, but you want that to be more consistent. And if it doesn't get more consistent, I still do believe that the D-backs will, entertain the starting pitcher market come deadline time.
Yeah, I think that you're certainly right that the Diamondbacks still should be in the running for a starting pitcher, especially, I mean, when you look at Brandon Faude's rough start that he had against the Rays a few days back. I mean, he didn't even make it through, I think, the fourth inning. I think he went 3 2/3, and he gave up, I know, 6 earned runs in that game, which, you're looking at a guy in Brandon Faude who is being relied upon to be a solid starting pitcher in your rotation, and he's been anything but that. I mean, granted, he's still super young, and there have been guys that have really struggled ever since they got called up to the majors in their first few times around, and then they've started to really like get it settled into their roles, and hopefully that can be the case when it comes to Brandon Faude, because of just the hype and the potential that he's being propped up to be. But really, at this point, especially when you also consider that you're seeing a few of the major contenders in baseball go out and try and add to their not only their bullpen, but also their rotation as well. Like we just saw the Rangers trade for Aroldis Chapman, which the Rangers look legit this year. So if I'm Mike Hazen, I'm certainly just keeping an eye on all of the transactions that, not only happened with the Rangers recently, but also moving forward, because I think at this point it's safe to say that the Diamondbacks are going to be in the running for a playoff spot this year. Now, whether that means they're going to win the division is still, I think, going to be up for grabs, even though they currently at the moment have a 3-game lead. It's still not enough cushion, I think, to really cement themselves in that position, especially since there's a lot of baseball left to be played at this point. But I think it's important for the Diamondbacks to certainly be aggressive and aggressive fast, because you want to make sure that you keep on building that lead, not only in the division, but also like solidify yourself a playoff spot, hopefully in this upcoming year.
Yeah, no division lead is safe in the NL West. Yeah, it seems like every year, 4 out of the 5 teams are going to be in the playoff mix, and that's the case this year. With even though the Padres are off to a really slow start, they are just an extremely talented team that you can't count out until the end of the year. So it's going to be tough to be able to maintain this division lead. I hope they can, and I think they got a decent shot. But we know that, this has been the Dodgers division to lose the past like decade or so. So you just got to maintain this lead. And, hopefully they address some of their needs at the deadline. And, I think the fact that, the D-backs have kind of struggled with, or some of the D-backs top prospects have struggled when getting to the big leagues, like we've seen this year with Brandon Faude. I think that, I'm still confident in the D-backs farm system. I think it's one of the best in the league. But if the right guy is available at the deadline, I don't think you should be, too conservative when it comes to offering some of your top prospects in these deals. I think, the only guys that it would really stink to trade is their top two prospects in Jordan Lawler and Drew Jones. But other than that, maybe a team calls about Brandon Faude for, an ace type of guy. Like if the this is just an idea, but if the Guardians were to call up the D-backs and say, hey, we'll give you Shane Bieber for Brandon Faude and a couple other guys, I don't think the D-backs should, hesitate about that because, we don't know how Brandon Faude's going to turn out. He could, he could figure it out. He's still very young. I'm not saying he's a bust, but the D-backs, like I said, they can't be too aggressive. They can't just ship off the whole farm system in 1 year. But if the right guy is available, the D-backs definitely need to make the move and address some of their needs in the bullpen as well as the starting rotation.
Yeah, that's well said. And I wholeheartedly agree with you. And yeah, I wouldn't hesitate one bit if you have to give up one of your top prospects for a starting caliber pitcher to add to your rotation. I wouldn't hesitate to pull the trigger on that either, especially like as you mentioned, as a potential deal of giving up even Brandon Faude or one of your other top prospects. Now, the one thing that you obviously want to avoid, because we've seen this in the past with the Diamondbacks, for example, when they traded away Dansby Swanson for Shelby Miller, which is probably one of the worst trades in Diamondbacks history. The same thing could also be said for the Max Scherzer trade as well, when they shipped him off to Detroit and they ended up getting Ian Kennedy and Edwin Jackson. Now, Edwin Jackson, of course, is going to be always known for that no-hitter that he had with the Diamondbacks in 2010. And Ian Kennedy was also a solid arm in the rotation, especially on that 2011 Diamondbacks team. But there's always that risk that you take when you trade away one of your top prospects for a starting caliber pitcher in this league. But at this point, I mean, if the Diamondbacks were to pull the trigger on a guy like Shane Bieber or even Dylan Cease, or even like, some other guy as well that is a proven starter in this league, and you have to give up one of your prospects, then they better make damn well sure that, I mean, this guy is going to be it. And I think, like, it's pretty safe to say that, I mean, we should have a pretty strong trust factor with Mike Hazen, given that he's been able to go and build up the Diamondbacks not only through the farm system. So, I mean, I think, like, there's no doubt that they could probably recover in that aspect. But at this point, if they're really serious about winning now and going on a legitimate run, you got to be willing to go and take those risks. Speaking of the Diamondbacks, they currently have their three-game series with the Angels, and today is their third and final game. They actually wrapped up the series win yesterday with a 3-1 victory over the Angels, in which Scott McGuff got the save. That was a big-time moment, especially for McGuff, who actually blew a save against the Rays, which was super disappointing because in that exact game, Zach Davies probably had the best start that we'd ever seen from him in a Diamondbacks uniform. But nonetheless, I mean, he was able to go and get that big save and put the Diamondbacks back on track, which good for him because, look, as a closer in this league, you always feel like you have the, I mean, every time you come in with the lead in your team's hands, it's always on you to make sure that you deliver and make sure that you secure the win. And for McGuff, I mean, you could tell he was visibly upset when he gave up those three unanswered runs by the Rays in the top of that ninth inning because the Diamondbacks were leading 2-0 and they ended up losing that game 3-2. And for him to be able to bounce back, that's good for him. And hopefully he can really this can really put him back on track and he can start to be the Scott McGuff that we're accustomed to seeing. And we certainly, I mean, he looked a little bit rocky yesterday. He did have two on and two out with the go-ahead run in Hunter Renfroe, but he got a big strikeout on Renfroe yesterday. So good for him. good for him to bounce back in that way. And hopefully now that can get his confidence back on track.
Yeah, it was good to see, closers, it's one of the toughest jobs in baseball. You always have to have a short-term memory. So it's good to see that McGuff didn't let that blown save against the Rays get to him too much, because before that he had been lights out. I think it was like 20 something scoreless innings. So yeah, other than his little hiccup against the Rays, he's been very solid as of late, and it was good to see him get that save against the last night against the Angels.
Now, right now, as we speak, the Diamondbacks currently have their third game going on against the Angels. They're currently down 4-2. Zach Gallen in that game has given up four hits on four runs through four innings. I'll tell you what, it's the main thing here is that the Diamondbacks at least got the series win because they really struggled during their last couple of series. They had a rough series against the Giants. That Rays series was just heartbreaking. I mean, and really, for both of those, I mean, outside of really the Giants series, the Rays series, the Diamondbacks should have won. The Giants series, I mean, they stayed pretty competitive every time. I mean, it was kind of back and forth in that game for a little bit. I mean, you had this was the Merrill Kelly start where in that game specifically, the Diamondbacks were leading 5-3, and then the Giants answered back, and then the Diamondbacks ended up losing that game 7-5. So it was just a rough series for them, at least going up against their National League West rivals. But it's great to see them, certainly get, again, like I said, get this series win, and hopefully against the Mets and the Pirates, they should be able to beat those teams as well, because, I mean, we know that the Diamondbacks certainly are better than both the Mets and the Pirates at this point.
Is the Mets and the Pirates their last two series before the All-Star break, or do they have another one after that? Okay.
The Mets in the series, yeah, they're going to be the last two series.
Yeah, so I mean, a couple, Mets and Pirates haven't been anything special this year, but still two pretty solid teams. So hopefully the D-backs can get the sweep today against the Angels, and a couple nice series against the Mets and Pirates to round out what has been just an excellent first half coming from the D-backs.
Absolutely. And hopefully they can keep those good vibes rolling. All righty, guys. That's going to do it for us here on the Valley Experience Podcast. Alongside Logan Loeber, I'm Ryan Pasesnik. Thank you so much for tuning in. Make sure to subscribe. Also, check us out on Instagram and Twitter on the Valley XP. Thank you all so much for tuning in. As always, we love you guys. Y'all are the best. And go AZ Sports and go sports in general.
Yep. Thank you guys so much for your support. We look forward to doing this every week and all the love you guys show. So thanks for tuning in, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one.
So long, everybody.